Hello, I'm Andrew Finney, and welcome to the Nurse Researcher Podcast, a podcast aimed at all nurses at all levels interested in any aspect of a research career. We hope you find this podcast useful and enjoy listening to it. Do listen right to the end, where myself and Eleanor Hovard deliver a summary, and do give us a rating, review us, and do press subscribe or follow wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nurse Researcher Podcast. And this is our first bonus episode, and all will be revealed as to why. And I want to introduce our guest for this episode, which is Professor Pauline Walsh from Keele University. Hi, Pauline, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
And you have such a long title, Pauline, that I didn't dare to try to say it right. So do you want to tell us your working title?
Okay, I'm the Pro Vice Chancellor for Health and Wellbeing and Executive Dean for the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences at Keele University.
There you are. I feel fully justified in asking you to say it now rather than me. I'm another person who I can proudly say has listened to the podcast, so you understand role that this podcast is trying to play and what we're trying to do with nurse research at all levels. So we always start by saying to our guest, how did you become a nurse and why did you become a nurse?
So that's quite an interesting one, Andrew, because my family tell me that I wanted to be a nurse when I was, you know, in my early teenage years. I don't necessarily remember that as strongly. But so I went into nursing probably in what we would call today as a widening participation student. I took the DC test, as it was known at the time, and I started doing my orthopaedic nursing qualification when you could do it before your general. And the day I stepped onto a ward, onto a placement, I knew I'd done the right thing. Mm-hmm. So that I became a nurse almost accidentally, really. But as soon as I actually got into it, I thought this is something I can do and something I want to do.
So it becomes a vocation for people, doesn't it? And probably when we start as nurses, we're told it's a profession, but it feels like a vocation. It's something we've always wanted to do. And I think sometimes we feel like we develop into the professional side of things when we recognize the academic roots and the academic roles. How did you first come about developing an academic role as a nurse?
So when I qualified in my general training, I then did a period working on an orthopaedic trauma ward, and then I moved to intensive care. And when I went away to do my intensive care course at the time, I was inspired really by one of my lecturers who had a role where she taught us in the classroom, but we also saw her in the clinical environment. And I remember thinking one day I'd like to do something like that. I think she was a role model for me. Mm. And, you know, I didn't do anything for a few years, but then an opportunity came up in my local trust to have a secondment into what was then the School of Nursing. So I went there for a year, and of course the rest is history.
And research for you, I know because we've had a little pre-chat, research for you didn't sort of first come into your sphere when you became an academic. Research was something that you identified very, very early in your career, but perhaps just didn't get the credit for it. Is that right?
Yes. So when I did my training, each year they offered a prize to one of the students. And this year the prize was funding to undertake a project. So I was awarded the prize, and I wanted to look at the development needs of newly qualified staff nurses, probably because I was terrified myself about being one. And so I did this project where I went and interviewed some eminent nurses at the time, you know, academics who'd written books, and I'd use their books for my studying. And I went to different parts of the country. I met with staff nurses. I met with directors of nursing. And I pulled together this report, which made recommendations for what my local trust ought to do in order to support newly qualified nurses. And I'm really pleased to say that they implemented it. But at the time, nobody spoke. I had nobody who read anything or supported me, and no one suggested that I publish it. So it was a piece of work that I don't even have the actual hard copy anymore of the report that I wrote.
It really demonstrates how we've moved on, doesn't it, as a profession, to recognise the value of almost sort of stamping what you do with that sense of publication and output. So that was that was early work as a staff nurse, perhaps. But what other roles in research did you have prior to a PhD opportunity?
So one of the other areas of work I did is when I did my master's program, actually here at Keele, although I wasn't working at Keele at the time. I did a study looking at life and death decision making in critical care environments, again, where I interviewed, so it was a qualitative study. And that was a clinical focused piece of work, which was really interesting. But prior to that, I'd also done some bits of work on looking at the student experience and looking at how we support preceptorship. And I've just been involved in doing a number of small-scale qualitative work, but I was also part of a team that got funding to look at the needs of placement providers across the West Midlands. So I did that under the supervision of a professor and a research team. So at that point, I was working in a school of nursing, but not in a research capacity. So I joined this team because I had expertise around practice learning. And again, that showed me that, you know, you can engage in research without necessarily being the leader of that research project, but you can still contribute something really positive to it.
And I recall you doing certainly modular aspects of a Masters of Research, and then your PhD opportunities came along. Do you want us to tell us about what the PhD was and what that what happened there?
Yeah, so I decided to do a PhD once I joined Keele, and I was in a senior role within a school as a director of undergraduate programs. And I was looking at attrition in pre-registration programs. And I, as you say, I did a number of the modules that you have to do for the research training part of the PhD, and had got to the point of having my progression interview. But actually what became apparent was we were trying to do far too much with this PhD study. At the same time, I then was promoted to be the head of school for the School of Nursing and Midwifery. And in conversation with my line manager at the time, we discussed, you know, the sort of issues around trying to do a PhD and also be a head of school in a busy school that was a growing, developing school. And I had to ask myself the question, and the question was posed to me, why are you doing the PhD? And when I actually really sat down and thought about it, my answer was because I think people will expect me to do it. And I realized that I didn't actually need to do a PhD to be able to do the job I wanted to do or to do the research that I wanted to do, because actually I still went on and did some a number of small scale research studies after deciding not to continue with the formal PhD. So I think for me it was, you know, do I need to do this because it's the norm to do it, or actually should I do the things that actually will give me the information and the outcomes that I need right now to do the job I'm doing? And I chose the latter.
Yeah. And that's why this is the bonus episode. There's the giveaway, the first bonus episode, because I think you're shown us a different pathway. And I think it's good for people to hear that as well. You said something to me earlier about, you know, it's important to decide whether you need a PhD to progress. And that's perhaps the advice we can give to people wanting to have a research role. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think, you know, we don't all have to take the expected route. I think it's about being open to research and engaging in research. And actually, you know, I did have a level of research training in terms of the modules that I'd undertaken. So I'm not advocating that you don't have to have learning and some knowledge acquisition about how to conduct research if you want to do it, because you've got to be ethical in the way that you conduct things. But, you know, there are ways you can gain that knowledge and experience without necessarily it being a PhD. So I think it's, you know, there are different ways of doing things. Not that I would discourage people from doing a PhD, but, you know, occasionally people's circumstances may mean it's not the right thing to do.
Yeah. And I think if we look at the Chief Nursing Officer's strategic, you know, plan for research from 2021, it's about developing people that are consumers of research, deliverers of research, and eventually conductors and leaders of research. So there are many roles in for nurses with research, and PhD has to be the right route for you, doesn't it? That's because it's a big commitment.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is a big commitment. And I think it's also about looking at your own personal strengths and what you bring to a collective piece of work. Because I think the other thing is we're moving away from seeing things like PhDs or research as an individual pursuit to more being the best research is done in a team and it's a collaborative activity. So not everybody in that team needs to have the same qualifications or the same skills or the same experiences. It's a team that brings different things to it.
Yeah, completely agree. And I suppose the other thing alongside that is that some nurses will feel better suited to a professional doctorate and a different way of engaging in research. And that's something that we've really supported here at Keele, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I fully support that because, again, unless you're going to want to be a principal investigator, you know, the professional doctorate really gives you those skills and those understanding of how to use evidence in such a strong way, and allows you, the really exciting thing for me is it allows you to have an in-depth look at a particular area of professional practice that you're interested in. And that's the bit that I think is really good. And from that process, you are then really impacting on whatever the job role is that you're doing. So your practice is improving through your study, which I think is so important.
Yeah, yeah. And a route I think that we're starting to see steadily evolve and grow, you know, to a great extent. So the success story is in your title. Your professor, Pauline Walsh, you are, I'm happy to say that as a nurse by background and the dean of our faculty, you sit as dean over a medical school, School of Allied Health Professions, pharmacy, bioengineering, nursing and midwifery. How does that come about?
So I suppose it came about not through an intentional approach on my side, but I was very happy as the head of School of Nursing and Midwifery. Had been doing it for 7.5 years, something like that. Was starting to think about where might I go next. Had just been fairly recently promoted to a professor, so I'd got my personal chair. And if I'm honest, I was thinking I'd probably go down the PVC education route. And then I was asked to be the interim dean for the faculty. And I agreed to do it, a bit reluctantly at first, if I'm honest. Started doing the job and then suddenly realized there was so much I could do. And I just felt I can have a positive impact on the faculty. And so decide completely changed what my career plans were and went through the very rigorous, robust process of the selection process when the post was advertised. But it wasn't something I necessarily thought I would do because I suppose, like many other nurses, I thought, well, if there's a medical school, they'll want it to be a doctor. And actually, having done the role as an interim executive dean, I realised that that was actually not true at all. And it's more about what are your personal qualities, what leadership skills do you bring? And that's what I think is the most important part of my job is the leadership skills that I bring.
And you are synonymous for that, for the leadership. And so before I sort of focus you on nursing research, what do you feel have been the learning points for you to have that strategic overview of research across a faculty, across so many disciplines? What has that taught you, and what have you been able to sort of feed back into perhaps your own discipline of nursing?
So I think that when I first took the role on, probably the research side of things was the area that I was most nervous of. How am I going to sit there at the table representing the research of the faculty? And there's some pretty amazing research that happens in our faculty. But again, what I very quickly realized is it's about the leadership. It's about being able to look at a research team and understand what they're trying to achieve. I don't have to understand the nuts and bolts of the individual research project. And I think once you take it to that higher level of realizing this is about, does this strategy make sense? Is it going to increase the impact of research? Is it going to increase the number of people that are doing research? And I think, my understanding and my knowledge and expertise is far greater now than it was at the beginning of this role. And it's like anything, you learn with experience. And at the very beginning, I listened to other people who knew what they were on about. So I think it is about recognizing the areas that you have that are not as strong as others, and therefore seeking the right support and advice and taking that on board when you make decisions. So, again, it goes back to the thing that you're never a person in isolation, you're always part of a team.
And I suppose we here, and I think a lot of HEIs are really pushing for cross-discipline research and multidisciplinary research, and that brings strength as well, doesn't it? So in your time as dean here and having that strategic overview of research, it's changed tremendously for nurses. I think we recognize allied health professions, pharmacists that we work with here at Keele, we recognize that we're perhaps some years behind medicine and in its way of always having clinical academics and always having a firm foot in a research camp. And we're starting to play catch up, and we're starting to develop schools of nursing, allied health professions and the like with research. How do you think it's changed in your time as dean? There seems to be a lot of funding, doesn't it? Doesn't there, in this area now, where we're focusing on medical careers and clinical academic careers?
I think it's really important to remember that we shouldn't look at what some other profession has and say, well, that's why we can't do something because they've got this and we haven't. It is about because there are opportunities now. The most important thing is inspiring actually early career nurses as their students, in my view. So I think education in universities, we've got a real place here to make sure that students understand the importance of research, that they want to be engaged in it, and that they see the relevance of it to their practice. I think for us also, it is about that age-old problem of thinking, how do we find time for people? And I think maybe the, what I've learned over the years is that actually not everybody can do everything. And if you want to build capacity and capability, you do have to start by identifying a few people that you're going to support, and as that grows, they then support more, and actually you build then a group of individuals who have the experience and expertise. But that does mean that we have to look at how we allocate, if you like, workloads, and whether that is in the clinical environment or whether that is in an academic environment, it's the same issue that nurse leaders have got to be behind the vision to improve the clinical academic career prospects for nursing. So it's, I think, incumbent on nurse leaders to be the ones champion it. And certainly it's something I've tried to do, is to champion nursing within this multi-professional arena. And also, sometimes it's, being in a meeting where somebody's discussing something and say, well, have you thought about what nursing involvement could be in this project? Mm. Well, why don't you talk to so-and-so? And actually, sometimes people just don't realise the contribution nurses can make to a multidisciplinary project. And I think that's becoming better understood. So I think it's both about nurses themselves wanting it and seeing it and being supported by nurse leaders, but it's also about other professions realising that nurses have something to contribute in that space.
Yeah, completely agree. And I suppose we've been titled as an underrepresented discipline with recent awards. And whether we view that as the title we want or not, I think the representation will come because we've had the Research for Patient Benefit commitment this year, our own School of Primary Care Research, which centralises here at Keele, has looked at as non-medical awards. And Ruth Endicott has recently announced the £30 million, which I think is £30 million a year for 5 years, for a number of pre-doctoral, post-doctoral and bridging awards. Now is the time, isn't it? If we go back to the time when you were doing a project, early in your career and nobody even told you to publish it, we now have people in an academic standing that can support those in the clinical setting and vice versa. So that cross-fertilization of clinical practice and academia needs to work together to really maximize these opportunities now, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what I mean about it's really upon us as nurse leaders to actually work together to give the opportunities to provide a framework for people to actually step into that space. Because if we don't provide, the framework for people, the support, the networks, the links for, oh, well, that person's doing a project on this, actually talk to them as well because they've already done this methodology. Or, I think if we don't have that, then we'll just end up with nurses who dip their toe, find it too isolating and challenging because they've got a busy clinical role and there's no, and won't carry on. So I think we can do more harm if we don't put the support networks around people and enable them to join a team, then we can not even put them there in the first place. Because there's nothing worse than a bad experience, is there really, to switch people off? No.
So if you were talking to, let's say we've got our new intake of pre-registration nurses in front of us now, what would be your message to them about potential research opportunities as they develop their career? What would you be saying to those new recruits now?
I think I'd be saying to them, research is just another thing that people do. Don't be frightened of it. Because I think people put it on a bit of a pedestal. And actually, in some ways, it's very straightforward. You follow a process, a protocol. There are predetermined methodologies, it's so I think I'd say to them, have an inquiring mind. That's the most important thing. Try to understand why you're doing things and try to look at, well, how can I improve that? And just asking that question, how can we improve this, is the beginning of your research question.
Yeah,
So
perfect.
for me, that's what it's about. It's about how can I make this experience better for my patients?
Yeah, and I think in all of the interviews that we've done, it's been that the when the questions come from the heart and that desire for to improve patient care, it's a much richer PhD than one you might pick off the shelf. So I think that is, that's the perfect thing to say about that actually. So going back to you, and your career, I ask everybody, if you had your opportunity to start again, not just particularly research with this episode, but would you do anything differently in your research career or nursing career, should I say, perhaps?
That's a really hard one to answer because, I don't know necessarily that I would, because we learn from both our mistakes and our successes, and the environment at the time. So, yes, it would have been nice if somebody had encouraged me at that very first project to publish it, or co-authored it with me. But despite that, I have been able to do a career, have a career that has been really fulfilling. I have published papers, I have done research throughout my years. But so I think probably not. I don't think I'd change it. I'd probably want to change some of the attitudes that I've met along the way. And I've spent many years trying to do that. But actually, all the experiences I've had have made me who I am today, really.
And at the time when it's current, it doesn't matter what era we're talking about, we don't know what we don't know, do we? So if we don't know that we can publish, then you can't change that. If we didn't know that at that time, that's the way it is. So there's no point in, because you can sort of think back, but you can think, well, what's the point in regretting anything? Because actually, when you've had success and you moved on in different ventures, it's been a success. For you, and I'm going to ask you this question with a slightly different for a slightly different reason, because it's not well, it is common knowledge that you're about to retire, Pauline, at the end of this year.
I am, yes,
So,
indeed.
and this can't be the answer to the question, by the way, but the key question I always ask people is, what have been your career highlights? And you can't say retirement, but it's a great time to ask you this because it's the perfect time for you to think about it as you're coming to that end stage of that full-time role.
I suppose my career highlight was becoming a professor, because I never in my wildest dreams as a child would have ever thought that. So for me, that on a personal level, that was something that is very much recognizing you as an individual and the work you're doing, not just the job you do. So probably I think that. And I would say probably the time I enjoyed the most was my time as head of School of Nursing and Midwifery. That was probably the best 7.5 years of my career in terms of enjoyment and fulfillment.
Marvelous. And A perfect end to a podcast when it's called the Professor Series and the highlight of your career is becoming a professor. So, Pauline, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
I'm sure we'll still see you here, there, and everywhere. But good luck with retirement and really make the most
Thank
of it
you
and
so
enjoy
much.
that. We really appreciate your time for the episode. So thanks, Pauline.
Okay, Andrew, thank you. Bye-bye.
Hello and welcome back to the Nurse Researcher Podcast. Again, I'm joined by Eleanor Hovard, who's joining me today to talk about the Pauline Walsh interview. It's our first bonus episode, and I think that was probably clear throughout as to why, because Pauline's route to professor was very different. She'd clearly had almost a sort of crossroads opportunity to really go down that need to be head of school, been successful to be head of school, do I need to do a PhD? So it started with a research career and then dropped off at the progression point of PhD, and then had gone into a very strategic role eventually as an executive dean of a faculty, which she's just about to retire from. So we saw somebody who'd got a very strategic overview of research, and somebody that had spoke really positively about getting the right teams together and learning from people if you don't feel you've got the knowledge base at that level. So she'd learned the game of research a little bit. But how different did it sound to you? Because we're used to that pathway, aren't we, of PhD and progression to PA and progression to professorship. And Pauline's was a very different and honest route, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, Andrew. It's Pauline tells a very different story to the other interviews that you have done. But also, you know, she tells a story of someone who's been extremely successful and had to make some difficult decisions, I think, didn't she, along the way, having started her PhD at Keele, but obviously, you know, progressed and developed and was promoted, you know, to head of school for nursing and midwifery research, and then had to make that. I mean, I can't imagine, actually. It must have been really difficult because there's such a huge amount of responsibility, I imagine, that comes with a role like that. And trying to do your PhD would be extremely difficult, wouldn't it? But it is a personal commitment, I think, isn't it? But yes, I think it's a different journey. But I think Pauline did emphasize the importance and value of research and leadership and teamwork and collaboration. That is important to research. I found it really curious, you know, what she was saying and how she was nervous about the research side of things, but emphasized the leadership, obviously one of her key strengths, but how important it was to her to bring out the best in other people and support research, you know, despite not having finished that PhD for really important reasons. She was still extremely supportive of other nurses and research teams, and also highlighted, you know, how it's important to, for her, it was important to recognize her own strengths and weaknesses and listen to experts. But of course, there's a skill in that as well, isn't there? Listening to other experts and making your judgment. And I thought it was interesting what she said about, you know, not everyone can do everything. And, you know, she's right. You do have to sometimes make those critical decisions, but she's focused on identifying, you know, people that have been capable of growing their own capacity and development and then building upon that and looking at those strategic aspects of how workloads are allocated and creating and nurturing that clinical academic environment, and, you know, emphasize that nurse leaders have to be behind the vision to be able to improve clinical academic career prospects. And she's a real champion, isn't she, for nurses developing in research. I thought it was interesting that she highlighted that there's still sometimes an issue around nurses not being recognized for their contributions on multidisciplinary projects. You know, why is that? She also highlighted, though, that the NIH are building that infrastructure for nurses, midwives and allied health professionals. And there's a real investment there, which, you know, we absolutely love, and we need that framework, like she highlighted, to step into that space. We really need that support, and she's obviously created a lot of support and networks and the links for that. So that was fascinating. I think one of the most interesting things that I think I found was when she mentioned that research has been put on, well, her view is that research is sometimes put on a pedestal, And it made me think, is that what other people may think too? And maybe that's more the academic side of things. Or, you know, do individuals see that from a delivery perspective too? Because if they do, maybe it seems unreachable. And, you know, they may have expectations of individuals doing what might seem as the impossible, really. And has that come because people have titles and credentials and all those things? But it can be, maybe it can seem a bit difficult to connect with people then, you know, if some people are visualized as being on that pedestal. So I thought that was really interesting, actually, that she mentioned that, because that hadn't come out previously, in other interviews. But yeah, really important. And I loved what she said at the end about, you know, how can we thinking about clinical staff and how you can develop your research questions, and, you know, focusing on what you can improve. And really, that's the start of research questions. How can you make those experiences better for patients? But yeah, a very different story that Pauline tells, but nonetheless very successful.
And I thought it was worth hearing, because we've got this, if we look at the CNO strategy, we've got that sort of research engagement, research delivery. There are lots of different roles, and I quite like the fact that she'd emphasize that, you know, become part of a team to really to become involved in research. You don't have to be the principal investigator. And we don't, you know, if every nurse wanted to do a PhD, there wouldn't be a great deal of care going on, would there? And a great deal of treatment and therapy. It would all be people away from the patient bedside. So we want a ratio, don't we? A strong ratio of academic nurses and clinical academics. And we don't quite know what the balance is yet. What we know is we're probably underrepresented from a research perspective. But I quite like the honesty. I quite like that sense that actually that the direction of travel was that I needed to go down the leadership and the management route. And Kiehl's, I don't know if it's unique or not, that there are several ways of sort of developing to that stage of chair. And we have these contracts of research and education, pure research and education and scholarship, and you can develop in those routes. And I think Pauline's very much championed education over the years and leadership, and but research has been a core component of what she's done. And she's been very astute and strategic at trying to manage research across a whole faculty and allowing the sort of stronger schools, perhaps like a medical school, to bleed into the other schools a little bit, to make sure that research is cross faculty rather than sitting in individual schools where there could be repetition. There's probably a lack of support in some areas, and probably over, you know, over supported in other areas. And she's brought a real balance across the faculty without really having to sort of bring any harm to any individual school or cause any problems. It's we've got this faculty research approach now, and I think it allows people that mental health nurses can work with mental health, you know, medics and people that perhaps work in pediatric nursing can work with pediatricians to do research, and cardiovascular disease would be the same. And so it's quite good, I think. And it goes back to that sense of what she was saying about join a team, be part of a team, get a strong team. It's the team that gets around. We know it's the individual, and you're right in the middle of it at the minute, but we know it's the individual with the PhD and the support of a supervisory team. But once you do become postdoc, it is about building the team for the bid and for the grant, and making sure that it looks strong on paper. So I thought it was just interesting to let people hear a slightly different view, in a sense
I
that
would
there are
agree.
research roles for everybody, even if they're not PhDs.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is about identifying your strengths and your passions, isn't it? And I can see what she's done, you know, because when you do network and you connect with other disciplines, you know, you can develop more creative ideas. So she's obviously tried to nurture that at Kiel. So that makes an awful lot of sense. And she's made me really think, actually, you know, having reflected on what she said about research being on a pedestal as well, about what we can do in terms of making ourselves more approachable, perhaps as researchers, and sharing our stories through the, you know, through your podcast as well, so that people understand, well, you do have to start somewhere. And maybe those titles and the credentials, they come along obviously with getting PhD and each level of the career pathway, but actually, you're still human beings. You know, it doesn't make us any more superior to anybody else when you're doing these things. You know, and it's a challenge, and you learn along the way. So yeah, very interesting to hear her story.
And I do think there is that value initially of research modules within your undergraduate degree, within master's degrees, and
Yeah.
Probably further down the line, we might talk to somebody who's done a prof doc, or somebody who's probably, can you say post prof doc? But somebody who's at that level to see if it's
Yeah.
done anything different with their career, whether there's a different trajectory, and perhaps it's a sort of cohort study in the of the future, isn't it? Following people who've done prof docs and following people who've done PhDs, and to see where their careers venture off, or whether they go in different directions, or they actually develop the same things as they push on. But
Yeah.
really, really interesting to see the different pathways. And I think we'll be probably venturing more into that as we move beyond the professor series and
Yeah.
talk to people at different stages and different levels of research. What I do want to say is this isn't a Keel podcast. And I do realize I don't want it to feel very Keel centric at the moment, but what we are doing is we're probably beg, stealing, and borrowing from academics and colleagues that we know, and we are scoping out. We are looking for more people to interview. People are extremely busy, and we do have a number of profs lined up, and then we'll move into probably the mid-career researchers once we bring the professor series to an end. But what I can share is that I'm going to say in the can. We've already got a Professor Ruth Endicott's interview in the can, haven't we? So, and we might save that for the end of the Professor series, because I think that would be a fitting end to this first series. We never agreed how many episodes we were going to do, Eleanor, did we? We've gone with the flow.
Absolutely. It's just grown and developed, hasn't it, organically? So it's brilliant.
So
You've done a really great job.
I think we've got a few more left. I think we've got maybe three or four left of the professor series, and then we'll be starting to look for the mid-career researchers to tell their story, and that'll probably be the desire to get to professor, and where they're at in their career, X number of years postdoc. So, thanks for your time again today.
Thank you very much.
Probably a perfect time to wrap it up. So, until the next episode, thanks, Eleanor.
Thanks, Andrew. Take care.